Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And yeah, it's Friday. Happy Friday, Fantasy Sports Friday is the show you just tuned into, or about to tune into, here on HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm Jay Cruz. We talk sports, we talk fantasy sports, and current events going on with sports and the fantasy landscape out there. And, you know, at the beginning of the month, or a couple weeks before next month, our station manager here, Linda McKenzie, does a great job of asking all the hosts to give her a list of topics for our upcoming shows. That way they can be put up on the podcast on-demand link a little bit early. You might look by and go, oh, that sounds like an interesting topic, maybe to a new host that you just found out or stumbled upon. And last month, and knowing that this is the month for, you know, fantasy drafts for baseball and spring training, you know, I decided to kind of break down a few different of my philosophies and kind of use those as the title of the show. And you know, good chunk of each show around that, explaining that philosophy. And today's topic is finding a trade partner. Although, if I would have had just a moment's more foresight, I probably should have named this show, there's a lot of gambling going on this week. You know, we do talk about it, and I probably should mention, if you have a problem or know someone who does have a problem with gambling, you can always Google Gamblers Anonymous. Find a meeting or a virtual meeting even locally, or call 1-800-GAMBLER and talk to somebody who's a counselor on a hotline and maybe, stop you in the moment. You know, I mention that because this is secretly one of the biggest gambling weekends in the United States. Of course, Super Bowl Sunday is the king that really, it's like Christmas Day for Las Vegas, you know, where everything sold in December really adds to the bottom line. It might make up for the slow months during the year. And, you know, Las Vegas, Super Bowl Sunday, that's a game that brings everybody out. You know, there's a lot of different bets besides just the teams playing and, you know, totals and stuff like that. There's prop bets. There's even, you know, goofy bets on how long will the national anthem last and, you know, things like that. Will there be a streaker on the field? You know, that was a prop bet last year. Some guy, you know, I think he maybe even made up the bet with a casino and bet on himself. Ended up spending a night in jail, but somehow making money off that. They're investigating that because Vegas hates to lose money. So anyway, I do want to put that out there because it is can be a real problem. People can chase their losses, bet way over their means, and you get it. It can be just as bad or sometimes worse than maybe any other addiction. My thing, sometimes worse. Oh, well, yeah, if you're a dad and you decided to go and lose $40,000, quote unquote, a big amount over a weekend on chasing some games, and, you know, your college tuition for your kids is due, or mortgage, car payment, you know, you can, especially when you're taking maybe family income away or, you know, money you've worked hard to earn yourself. So, you know, other addictions have other, you know, run their course too and can definitely have their own issues. But gambling's kind of a quiet one. And if you do have a problem, look into it. Just wanted to put that out there because we are going to talk a lot about gambling today. Obviously, I mentioned the NCAA tournament, and it's about the biggest, maybe even bigger in some cases, of a gambling weekend with brackets and pools and, you know, put in a couple bucks and try to pick all the 48 or 64 teams or a little bit more than that now. And, you know, who's going to end up winning the national championship? You know, there's websites dedicated to bracketology, and after the first day, I think there was less than, say, 0.94% perfect bracket out there. Obviously, you had to have picked the big upset, Kentucky losing to Oklahoma, and a handful of other games that were, you know, close and maybe tough to predict. When it gets to college basketball and college sports in general, I kind of put them in the back seat years ago. A couple things. I just have other things going on in life, and since I do follow professional sports pretty close and enjoy them, and the majority of my friends do too. If they go to a friend's house and they're watching a college game, I'm certainly not going to, you know, have a problem with that. I just don't spend as much time where I used to really, you know, years ago I'd sit there and go, man, I spent the whole winter watching football every Saturday and Sunday, and maybe something's got to go. And anyway, so for college sports, especially basketball, that's kind of where it drops off for me. Watch a little bit more football because I just enjoy football, but I do try to pay attention to the college tournaments and the, you know, brackets and all of that, although I don't really spend time researching or watching games or, you know, paying attention for the big tournaments. But I do enjoy the tournament concept, especially, you know, with a big field and you got men's and women's going at the same time. And it's just kind of fun checking out the David versus Goliath, or in the, you know, female, can't really come up with a clever name to make the analogy of David versus Goliath, but you know, the little school against the big school, the little school with a bunch of walk-ons and, you know, now grabbing people in the transfer portal, or, you know, just a bunch of maybe a young team that came together, or an older team that came together and overcame whatever adversity and ending up with a big win against a team that's heavily favored. You know, where college sports, and especially in women's, there's a vast difference. Men's there is too, but maybe not so much as some of the college powerhouse teams compared to some of the middle-of-the-road teams. But either way, it's fun watching elimination sports. I mean, when you turn on a game and basically you know that it's winner advance, loser go home, you're going to see great competition in most cases. And that's what's happening. NCAA tournament, this currently is day two. If you're listening Saturday, that'll be day three, which that's when the tournament starts to get a little more interesting. And after this whole weekend, definitely much more. I think we actually get down to the Sweet 16 after weekend number one. Basically, the goal of weekend number one is to win your pod. You have to win a eliminate the other three teams somehow and advance to the next week. Then you got a chance to kind of take a breath, cool in, and focus on next weekend where you do the same thing. And, of course, the games will be a little bit more spaced out so you can pay attention to more of them. Had a quick story. Well, it's all stories on my show, I guess. Anyway, I had a quick story. My friend Joe in the Bay Area, who we went to high school together and worked our first jobs together, making sandwiches for Togo's Sandwich Makers. Great submarine sandwiches. I think they're only here on the West Coast and not as many as there used to be. Similar to maybe Jersey Mike's, but a little different. I think better. Anyway, that was our first job. So, you know, I like music. Of course I like music. Yeah, I like sports. I like sports too. So we went to a lot of local games. We went to even a lot of soccer games, San Jose Earthquakes. We went to a number of 49er games. His family bought season tickets right when the Niners drafted Joe Montana. That was good timing. And they were nice enough to take me to a number of games for free, usually at least one a year, and got to see a couple playoffs. Anyway, we've been friends pretty much since we were like 15 or 16 or so, and remain so. But I remember years ago, maybe like 20 years ago now, he and a number of his friends would get together at a certain pizza parlor and watch the basketball tournament for the opening weekend, and then each week they would watch all the games there. And they probably weren't eating so much pizza as opposed to maybe drinking a lot of beer and, you know, gambling all weekend somehow on who was going to win each game. Now, instead of doing brackets, I think they all pulled numbers or team names out of a hat, and if you pulled out, let's say, UConn, a team that's favored, number one seed this year, favored to go pretty far, if you pick them out, you were in good shape. You know, you pick out Kentucky, you think, all right, they should win, and they get upset by Oakland, not Oakland, California, Oakland, Michigan. A lot of people think that might be a Bay Area team, but it's Oakland University in Michigan. Kind of think it cooler if they're from Oakland, California, because I'm kind of from there. But nonetheless, so those upsets happen. And it was just funny how they would spend the weekend watching the games, hanging out, and sometimes they would trade teams or what have you, thinking that, okay, that team's going to do really well. I'll give you these couple teams, you know, or whatever they would do until, you know, obviously one person would win that, win the full tournament for having that right team. So anyway, a lot of games going on today. I've been starting already, and a super busy day in the NCAA tournaments. I don't know if you can get in on any now since the competition has started, but it's just kind of fun to watch along. You know, you find out a lot more about a lot of different schools, and it's always fun to see the upsets. And sometimes it's fun to see a great team win it all as well. I think this year we're probably going to have more number one seeds in the Final Four than recently. So I wanted to get on to I wanted to mention a little bit of that because the NC2A thing is happening. And, again, it ties in with sort of the theme of the day, which I don't know if I should get into Shohei Ohtani or if I should go with the topic of the show. Let's move on to Shohei. That's the when Major League Baseball season started, and he was the prize free agent in the offseason. If you have been paying attention or even not, Shohei Ohtani, he's a pitcher and a hitter, which is very rare. Usually when you get to the pro level, they take one thing away. Either you're going to be a great pitcher and you're not going to play in the field, and we don't really want you taking swings with a bat, or we're going to put you in the field and you're going to hit and your pitching days are gone, except for that maybe one game a year where we're getting beat 19-0 in the middle of July and everyone in the pitching staff has been used or is dead dog tired because yesterday we got beat 12-0. Then you throw in a fielder player like that. Anyway, so Ohtani signs with the Dodgers. Figure that. They're kind of spending the most money, paying the luxury tax, and a team that's won a lot of division championships and has fallen short in the playoffs and World Series. Clayton Kershaw? Well, there's other reasons for that, too. But, you know, great pitcher who does get beat in the playoffs. I look at it like the Dodgers remind me a little bit of the A's of the 1980s with Canseco and Maguire and the seasons that they would have. And I followed every one of those games, and it's a long season in baseball, and you're doing good, you're in first place, and then, you know, somewhere around midseason, the announcers start talking about how you got to, you know, manage your pitching, setting up your rotation, and, you know, all this kind of stuff, when at the same time, you know, you got the front runner leading the division, like the A's did, like the Dodgers do currently, and they're so far out ahead that the team really isn't involved in, you know, serious day-to-day competition. Yeah, they might end up in a close game, might end up winning a close game, losing a close game, but at the end of that day, they're still 10, 11 games ahead of the second-place team, and they know they just kind of roll out, sort of stay healthy, keep doing what they're doing, and, you know, the percentages and the talent will get them to the playoffs. Now, there's going to be another number of other teams who don't have that luxury. They're struggling. They go out, maybe they lose a couple games in a row, chip away here and there, have a couple injuries, maybe a trade turns around the energy of the team a little bit, maybe they call up a rookie and he's having a great season, whatever it is, there's different chemistry and it's elusive each and every year in baseball, which is kind of why it's cool that they, you know, they do play the games. Basically, it's a 162-game season, and if you divide that, divide that into thirds, that's like roughly 53 54 games that either you're probably going to win at least 50 games. Even the worst teams right now are, and that's like the Oakland A's of current today, are picked around 55 to 60 total wins for the season, and they're really not that good. They lost a lot of games last year, and, you know, with the whole move to Las Vegas hanging over the head, who really knows? So, but they're kind of at least going to win 50, 55 games. And they're going to, every team is going to win at least 55, going to lose at least 55. What do you do with those 55 in the middle? That's really where the seasons break down. There's three-game series generally, occasional four-game series on a long weekend. But, you know, if you look at every week, weekend or every series you're playing in Major League Baseball, your goal is to win two out of three. You know, you might have a hot streak where you win 10 in a row, lose 7 in a row, whatever. But if you can try to get 2 out of 3, that's going to be putting you in close position at the end of the season just based off those numbers, you know, in a playoff position run. So, you know, while that's happening and teams are really focusing on just maybe catching up or haven't been playing as good as, you know, like the Dodgers and stuff. Anyway, it happened to Dennis Eckersley in the Kirk Gibson home run. And then it happened a couple years ago to Dennis Eckersley in the Roberto Alomar home run. Dennis Eckersley is one of the greatest relief pitchers in the history of the game. He won a lot of games for Oakland, saved a lot of games. But when it got to the playoffs, there was some pitching coach or batting coach on some team that watched every single solitary pitch of Dennis Eckersley and broke down every single solitary thing he did. Tendencies, he throws strikes on the first pitch, right down the middle. Okay, yeah, he throws them fast, but you kind of get an idea where it's going to be. A lot of people will just go up and be intimidated, and these hitters in the playoffs go, I'm going to have a different approach. So, you know, there's something about people watching Clayton Kershaw now. So anyway, Dodgers go out, spend a ton of money. They get Shohei Ohtani, great hitter, kind of the Babe Ruth of today, and that's a comparison that we have not really heard in most of our lifetimes, except for those that did see the Bambino and the great 1927 Yankees, possibly. And the Dodgers also went out and signed another guy from Japan, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I'm not sure about the first name, Mr. Yamamoto. And fortunately, he got shelled in their opener the other day. Lucky for him, that's not the biggest story with the Dodgers. I believe after the first game, before the second game, and by the way, the Dodgers and Padres opened the season officially in Seoul, South Korea. And it's pretty interesting. Definitely Major League Baseball getting a good buzz promoting the Major League Baseball to Korea, which is a country that does love baseball and has a lot of players and has put a number of players into the major leagues. And they did well in the World Baseball Classic. Japan, of course, they've been another country that's been way into baseball for many years, and Ohtani grew up and might be one of the best players ever. He's in a situation right now, though, that is a little strange for him and the Dodgers and his translator, his interpreter. He's been in the U.S. for a number of years, but when it comes to press conferences or whatever, I'm not sure if he's, you know, gone through lessons to learn English. Probably figured, hey, I'll just hire this interpreter. I don't know the relationship before that. I'm sure more will come out in this investigation than the stories, but yeah, I'm sure they're at least friends, you know, to a point, or developed a friendship, you know, through that. An interpreter, you know, you got to put a lot of trust into that person to say what you say to the public. You know, if you want to answer a question in a certain way, you know, that you got to trust that person to repeat your words. They have to be a channel for you, and you have to depend on them to give you clear, concise, real words you're hearing, you know, back from the people speaking English to him and translating into Japanese. So there's been a bunch of interpreters and translators in baseball for years. There's a lot of Latin players, and there's a lot of players and managers who, along the way, Spanish is more commonly used in Major League Baseball just because there are a larger number of Latin players in the game, And, you know, for certain things, just very easy to do that. International soccer, of course, is another one where a lot of players and managers, you know, speak a multiple amount of languages. And usually after somebody's been in a country or in a culture, they start to speak a little bit. So I'm not sure where Shohei is on his English lessons, if he's taking them or maybe doesn't feel comfortable, you know, publicly speaking, and chooses the interpreter. And that's fine. Not a big deal. The issue came when the story broke. Apparently there's been some investigation into money taken from Shohei Ohtani by the interpreter to cover massive gambling debts. Now, Shohei Ohtani, major league player, was making millions before he signed the mega contract in this offseason. $700 million to play 10 years baseball for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And people think, wow, $700 million? That's a lot of money. Well, a friend of mine once said, if they're paying you $700 million, they're making at least $701 somehow in the back end. So whoever's paying you the money, they're not losing. It just seems like a lot of money to, you know, play what's always been called a kid's game. But it's bigger than that. It's entertainment. And again, the Major League Baseball and all pro sports are a business. That's why they're professionals, and they pay top dollar for top talent to please their fans and win championships. And, you know, he was the number one free agent in the offseason as a pitcher who actually is not going to be pitching this year. He's getting Tommy John surgery, or just did, but he'll be serving as a designated hitter. And he hits for power, home run leader. He's been in the All-Star home run competition and, you know, many things like that. He's one of those guys, if you're casually watching a game and he comes up, you stop what you're doing and watch his at-bat. You know, maybe do that with really many other players in the game today. But he is one that you stop and watch what's happening. Even making an out, it could be exciting. Maybe it'll be a fly ball to the warning track, almost a home run. Maybe he'll hit a foul ball before maybe getting a hit or grounding into an out. Anyway, it's exciting stuff. And there's only really, like I would say, growing up, Reggie Jackson was one of those guys. I think Barry Bonds was one of those guys. And Pete Rose was one of those guys. I mention him because I'm sure he's following this story very close. He, of course, one of the great, some people say greatest hitter in baseball history, is the all-time hits leader. But he did gamble while he was managing his own team. And he quite frankly didn't admit to gambling on his own team, but or gambling on your own team to lose. That's the cardinal mistake that, you know, nobody wants to be, you know, caught doing. So I'm sure he's going to be paying attention to what happens with Shohei Ohtani. And the big question, was his interpreter the one who fell into the gambling habit? And is he being a good buddy and just paying the debts to, you know, again, he's worth, you know, millions, and apparently the gambling number is 4.5 million. Now, that doesn't even compare to, like, Bruno Mars, another guy who's not in sports, who apparently is $50 million in the hole, I believe, to MGM Properties. Even though he makes $90 million, he's $50 million in the hole, gambling debt. So, yeah, it's not 4.5 is a lot less than that, but you're sitting there going, 4.5, gambling? Man, that's a lot of money. If I had 4.5, why would I gamble? And that's a good question. You know, that's why some people might need to call 1-800-GAMBLERS Anonymous or go find them on the web. Because obviously at that point, it's not about the money. You know, it's something about the thrill, something different that you're seeking out of the action of putting money on a game, you know, it feels like free money. Problem is, even the most successful gamblers that are professionals only win maybe 52 to 55% of the time, enough to eke out an edge. But, you know, it's still 50-50, kind of like flipping a coin. People do research all the time and maybe are a little better, a little smarter, but a lot of people are just very impulsive. Anyway, his interpreter and the Ohtani story's going to go on, most people, I think, are hoping within their hearts that it was the interpreter and he's the one who had the issue, and he's been released of his duties. The Dodgers went ahead and fired him pronto once they found out about this, and have another interpreter in place for Shohei Ohtani. I think most people are just hoping it's not Ohtani who was doing the gambler and using his interpreter as the mule. Basically the person to be the beard, go into the casino or open up the account. I'll fund you. You just bet on who and when and how much I tell you to. So anyway, the truth is out there somewhere between those two stories. And it's probably something that won't be going away this entire baseball season. We haven't even really opened except for the Dodgers and Padres. And ironically, it is Dodgers and the most, maybe the face of the league right now. You know, but it's not the first time that the face of the league or someone this high up has been involved with gambling. You know, is this another symptom of what gambling is on a deeper level? Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player, winning championships, quite a gambler. There is rumor and speculation that the 2 years he took off from basketball and played baseball was because he was involved in gambling. And that's an urban myth. Some people say it's a little more true. Some people say it's horse pucky. Truth is in the middle. Back in the 60s, Paul Hornung, the golden boy, Notre Dame, Green Bay Packers, blonde, good-looking, scored a lot of touchdowns for the Packers. Well, he was suspended for a season, along with Alex Karras, a defensive lineman for the Lions, who... So Webster? Yeah, he was in the TV show Webster. He was also in Blazing Saddles, a movie that couldn't be made today based on, well, if you've seen Blazing Saddles, you know what I'm talking about. Those two were suspended for a season for, I believe, just hanging out with known gamblers. And, of course, Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle. You know, did he gamble on his own team to lose? Did Ohtani gamble on his own team to lose? That's the biggest cardinal sin right there. And I'm going to wrap this up, this segment up in just a moment. You know, the Super Bowl that just did happen in Las Vegas, the 49ers and Chiefs were kind of, not sequestered, but they were in a hotel that was about a good 25 miles away from the Strip. Not that they couldn't find a craps table or something in between that, but basically, you know, what are you going to do for a week when you're hanging out in Las Vegas and there's only so much, you know, football that you can do during the day? And, you know, the league was very adamant about don't be seen in a sports book. Don't even be seen in a casino. But, you know, kind of a gray area. You know, if you're going to go play some blackjack, that doesn't have anything to do with football and sports. Any of the card games, dice games, roulette, baccarat. But going into a sports book, even if you're not betting on baseball, there could still be a probability that you know people that know things in other lines of sports. Maybe you share an agent who also represents a couple baseball teams, and you're a football player, and your agent just happens to say, you know that arm injury about so-and-so? Yeah, it's a little worse than they're letting on. Oh, he's pitching today. That's information I can use. So, anyway, athletes do gamble or know about gambling. Don't think that they have their heads in the sand. There was the fantasy football scandal a couple years ago where Tommy Pham, I believe, was very upset with Jock Peterson over a ruling in fantasy football, and those guys are baseball players. So this will be a story that will not go away for quite some time, and it's probably going to be the side story to this year's Major League Baseball season. I'm Jay Cruz. We went a tad long, but don't worry. Going to take a quick break, and still got a little ways to go today on Fantasy Sports Friday here on HealthyLife.net Radio.
You know, when my my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
And we're back, Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz, your host. If you're on social media and feel like following me, I've got a couple sites, Facebook and Instagram. Find me under Jay Cruz Media, and it's also Backbeat Radio Show. We don't have a page for the Fantasy Sports Friday because also I manage a page for my cover band, Five Long Years. And at some point I'm like, I'm managing 6 social media sites. Besides 6 fantasy football franchises or fantasy sports franchises and a lot of other stuff. So I'm like, why do I need another page? But, you know, you can follow me on those sites if you wish. Or if you have questions about sports, fantasy sports, want me to check out your team, go over a trade proposal with you, anything like that. Or even if you want to say, hey, I liked your show, you can reach me at jcruzmedia@yahoo.com. Or simple, if you're listening to this radio station, HealthyLife.net, you can reach me at the station email, just simply jayj@HealthyLife.net. So we haven't got to the finding a trading partner yet portion of the show. And I should probably do that now before I break down last week's draft and talk about the Nolan Ryan documentary. Anyway, I have mentioned this in the past briefly, but in your leagues, finding a trading partner is pretty important. That's the only way you can, you know, make some adjustments without getting super duper lucky and finding good players on the waiver wire to replace underperforming players, injured players, or maybe position of need players. Specifically, coming up in the first week of this season, I've got a couple pitchers who are coming out of spring training a little slow. Their particular teams are being a little cautious, so I might have a need to add a extra pitcher, maybe off the waiver wire, because these pitchers might be coming back soon. Now, for a week or two, I might be short, so that's where the waiver wire comes in. Also, being able to make a trade. Maybe you struck out getting pitching in your draft. You maybe in lieu of pitching, you have a number of extra infielders or outfielders or a third catcher that somebody else might be able to use. So there's a couple ways to do it, but generally just ask a few people in your league. It, you know, there's always that fear of being, you know, ripped off or, you know, making a bad trade, but sometimes it works out for you and you end up making the good trade. The thing that's for me is to be honest and clear about trades or trade proposals. One of the players who I had focused on in the offseason in my auction draft is Yoshinobu Yamamoto, pitcher of the Dodgers, just signed after like 3 straight Japanese league equivalents to the Cy Young Award there. Still a young pitcher. Dodgers paid $300 million for him. Not Otani money, but pretty darn expensive. Anyway, he got shelled in his first night. Before the opening game, someone in my league did propose a trade to acquire Yamamoto from me. Offered up a pitcher and another outfielder or something. A couple guys that didn't even rank in the top 70. I think the pitcher did, and I may have bid on that pitcher in the auction, which may have given this owner maybe an indication that I was kind of high on that player and coveted that player. And after I got Yamamoto, who was the only player I really focused on, everything else was a general category position. I knew I needed another starting pitcher, or two in general. If I didn't get Yamamoto, it would be somebody else. And I had a, high dollar amount, and luckily I didn't have to spend that much, even though, it's $37 auction dollars. My absolute line in the sand was $39, $40. I was like, I'm not going to pay $40 for a player in the league. It's just too much money. I'd rather balance it out. So ended up picking him up, and the trade proposal, after him getting beat the other night, I'm thinking maybe he's not going to be so good, and I maybe should have taken that trade. But now I think over the course of the season, I trust that he's going to do okay. Whether I keep him next year, it remains to be seen at that high of a price. So nonetheless, that's somebody I know who may become a trade kind of carrot for another team. Hopefully he does well. That'll increase his trade value if I do feel like making a trade. And at some point, that's the thing. A lot of times somebody will, really kind of ask for your best player, or the guy who's under, you might not want to let go of that player. And, they might not offer you the best in return. So I also try to figure, if I'm going to try to trade for a player on another team, I try to make it fair. I go, this person's not going to give me that player for, what I'm offering, unless there's some other circumstances involved. So you kind of got to give a little bit and take a little bit. You got to give some to get some, and make it as fair as possible to basically have someone you can trust and trade in the future. Maybe I'll get the best end of it this time. Maybe next time that manager will get the best of it. But knowing that they're really not trying to rip you off, trying to be fair, and are just acquiring a player that they either like personally, or it's, again, position of need for something they don't have. And, sometimes these players work out that you end up really, liking and that you get in return. Last year, I was in much more of a seller's position, and I was offered a trade for one of my starting pitchers for an outfielder. And I checked out the outfielder. His name's Lane Thomas of the Washington Nationals. And I didn't really follow much of the Nationals because they're kind of in the bottom half of the standings, other than a few players I had on that team. But when I looked at Lane Thomas's numbers, he was up there and among top five in all categories for outfielders. And I'm like, okay. And he had a very team-friendly contract of only $1 last year. Now, the pitcher I did give up, Jose Berrios of Toronto, I also had for a $1 contract last year, and certainly someone I maybe would have kept, but I thought the young, high-scoring outfielder would be an upgrade over time. Usually pitching is important, but pitching is more fluctuates a lot more due to injuries, and again, due to some pitching coach watching Clayton Kershaw or Dennis Eckersley all season just mow people down, figures out those tendencies, and then you hit against those tendencies and, come up with a different strategy. So I thought the, young outfielder playing on the team was a good, kind of a good move. So I kept him this year, and I noticed that my opponent and trade partner kept Berrios as well. So that was a situation where I think it maybe helped us both out. And I didn't feel like Berrios as a pitcher was definitely, for him, he needed an extra pitcher because he ended up winning the league. And I didn't really have a problem with that. I got a good player in return who I'm using to build my team next year. So that gave me a better, position to come into this season's draft with that. Although the player I gave up also was worth keeping as well. So, sometimes that's like, well, that's not the worst thing to have happen. You know, we both kind of won out of the trade. And, you know, I think that next time a trade proposal happens, he'll be fair. And I have another guy in the league, the commissioner, Sam. We've made a number of trades over the years. And overall, it's been pretty fair. There's one trade, again, in my other league, him last year, he offered me wanted my closer, Josh Hader, and I don't even remember who he offered up, but basically I was kind of in last place, and I wasn't going anywhere. And he even kind of jokingly put that into me email. He goes, look, I know you like your player, but let's face it, you're not really going anywhere this year. Just hear me out. And, you know, it was just so honest and open about that that I go, you know, I'm not going anywhere this year. What the heck? A trade might not be the worst thing. And I just looked at the proposal and I thought, yeah, good enough. It didn't really matter that I was giving up, you know, a couple pretty good players. I was getting five good players in return. And I was like, okay, five good players, a couple good young prospects that he had picked up off the waiver wire and that I could keep cheaply, you know, seemed like a good thing. And as it turned out, the two players I traded went cold, and the five players I picked up, you know, I inserted most of them into my lineup, and it turned the season around. And he even wrote back, he's like, had I known that Josh Hader would hit such a wall, I never would have asked for him, you know. But that's just sometimes what happens. Man, happens in the pros as well. It did happen in the pros, so that's what we base our seasons off. So, you know, talk to your other managers in your league. Explain, if someone offers you a trade, maybe it's the old, you know, pile of poop for your all-pro. You know, just go, you know, hey, I didn't just fall off a turnip truck. I've been watching baseball X amount of time. And I, you know, just based off the statistics, you know, my kid can tell you that this is a one-sided trade, you know. Not opposed to making the trade, but there is a place on there you can counter offer. You know, and a lot of owners, I don't like to give up certain, you know, they only have a list of like their, you know, crummiest four or five guys that they want to trade. But sometimes to get something in quality, you're going to have to give up something quality in many cases, especially, you know, dealing with these leagues. Some cases you may personally know the other members of your league. In other cases, like this, you know, it's taken a couple years to, you know, build up, you know, a bit of a camaraderie. So, you know, use it as an open source to dialogue with other owners. Even if a trade is not consummated, at least you can kind of give somebody a philosophy. And I think, you know, by now, if you pay attention to, you know, some of the trades that do happen, you know, at least these two trade partners in my leagues know that, you know, my tendency is to get younger and cheaper, you know, as we're playing keeper leagues and playing for the future. You know, if I'm close to a championship, might not care so much about younger and cheaper. I might want to get who's hot now. But thing for me is I've been little hesitant in pulling the trigger and making a trade when I'm close to the playoffs, thinking, hey, I'm almost in the playoffs or I'm very close. I don't want to upset my position. At least I can qualify for the, you know, playoffs now. But that's something you got to think about, you know, being a buyer or seller. If you're close to the playoffs or close to the top, you know, make a trade, you know, offer up maybe a young prospect for somebody who's going to help you now in the short term. If you're not making the playoffs in the bottom half of the league, you know, start looking to next year. Get younger, get cheaper, and, you know, make sure at least you like the owner that you trade your superstar to for his best prospects. I'm Jay Cruz, Fantasy Sports Friday. We're going to take a break and come back and sort of talk about how the draft went last weekend.
Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everybody down! Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold on. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
And welcome back. Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz. This is HealthyLife.net Radio. And the final segment of today's show. You can always go back and listen on the on-demand page. You can even download it and, I don't know, keep it on your hard drive. You can share it with a friend that might be into baseball or might want to get that Gamblers Anonymous number that I talked about at the top of the show. Anyway, last week was the auction draft for the second season of our Dynasty League, which is kind of a league I've always wanted to be in, and I got pretty lucky finding this group of other players who have been in a couple of basketball and baseball for the last 5 or 6 years. We've had a keeper league where we draft by a snake draft and keep players up to 5. In baseball, I think it's 4 in basketball. It seems like we should keep more in baseball because it's a 25-man team as opposed to, you know, only one less in basketball, which is a 12 to 15-man team, but either way. And it's kind of cool knowing that you have a little core of your team each and every season. So if you, you know, you'd be rewarded for maybe making a trade, like one of the guys I picked up, Michael Harris II in that Josh Hader trade. And the fact he was a pick free agent pickup by the player who traded him to me, I have one more season at least where I can keep Michael Harris in round 24, 25, since he was a free agent pickup after the draft, and therefore their draft position is at the end of the draft. And he's a superstar level player. In a season or two, he gets reevaluated, and he'll probably be no less than a second or third round player. At that point, I go, do I want to give up a second or third round for this particular guy? So the commissioner and a couple other guys decided let's try an auction and a dynasty league where it's based off salary cap and your salary number that you keep into the following year. Now, to me, I was all excited because that's sort of how I came in doing fantasy baseball, was off auction leagues, and I liked the competitive level, having to play for next year, and, you know, certain restrictions. You know, we're in a National League only, so or this particular team, we're in a, you know, full universe, and it was cool. We even had an expansion draft off, you know, with even minor league players. So we've had, you know, minor league, auction draft, 2 seasons worth of that. In addition to expansion, you know, 2 more players joined our league. And that's just kind of cool. And it's cool that we've been able to keep it going. A lot of, there's a lot of leagues, if they're not ran well, they will, dry up quickly and not be very fun. And that's where some of the geniuses behind the scenes created daily fantasy, you know, for that player who just, you know, can't stand having a losing season and only wants to, you know, basically play with, you know, top shelf winners. And yeah, let's face it, that's most people. A lot of people like aren't as much invested into the deeper nuances of the game like myself, knowing that, you know, the late rounds and middle rounds are, you know, really where the draft is kind of won and the team is really built. Anyone can really go off and do fine with the top 10 players just off what the platform is going to give you if you just, rank them and go in there ahead of time and put certain players in a queue that you want to draft so you don't forget them later or overlook them later. And, there's certain players you want to, kind of stash and, put out there for other players to bid on. I did that quite a bit in this last draft. I have much more focus and felt pretty good about the team that I kept coming in. I had about $74 of fantasy baseball money to spend, and I only needed 6 players. As I mentioned before, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the big signing by the LA Dodgers from the Japanese League, figured, he was probably going to be the highest prospect pitching-wise that I would be able to openly bid on, so kind of set aside a budget of 40 of my $74 for him. And I figured I would go to the high 30s, maybe 40 even, but basically ended up getting him for $37, which is the highest paid player on my team, just like Shohei Ohtani makes more than him with the Dodgers, but the Dodgers actually spent a lot of money. And sadly, I've already had a trade proposal that I soundly rejected, and then he went out and did not make it through the first inning in his debut against the San Diego Padres the other night in Seoul, South Korea, that was broadcast in Southern California at 3 a.m. Nonetheless, I signed him. I needed another starting pitcher. Bid on a couple others. Ended up getting Bailey Ober of the Minnesota Twins. He gets double-digit wins and had good numbers with his WHIP and ERA. And the Twins are a pretty competitive team in the American League Central. The Guardians, a little bit better, but the Twins are usually pretty formidable. The other teams in that division, you got the Royals. They're not that good. The Tigers, see the Royals. And Detroit. Yeah, well, Detroit, I mentioned them twice, the Royals. And the Chicago White Sox. So you got half that division's just not that good. You got Cleveland, Minnesota, and they do fairly well. So Ober is a decent starting pitcher. Jose Leclerc, relief pitcher, kind of a bullpen guy, setup guy for the Texas Rangers. He had some okay numbers, and I needed 2 relief pitchers. So I picked him up, Kyle Finnegan of the Washington Nationals, again with some decent setup numbers, a couple saves, a little potential to maybe be the closer. Someone a little older than I originally thought, but not really too ancient. He's only like 32. And you're sitting there going, 32? I'd love to be 32. I wouldn't mind it either, but in baseball years, it's starting to be a few too many rings around the tree. And especially when you're talking about dynasty leagues where you project into the future where their salary goes up, but was able to get him for a pretty small price at $2. And then I needed a couple position players, mainly a second baseman to back up Jose Altuve. And ended up with Jake Cronenworth of the San Diego Padres. Now, he's a guy I nominated thinking someone else would bid for him, and I kind of have my eyes on a couple other players, although the thing is, when you put out a player to be bid on, if everybody passes, you got to be prepared to take on that player. So it's only a $1 salary for Cronenworth, and he's already paid dividends. He had a good game in the game where I think all Padres hitters had a good game against the Dodgers in the second game. And it wasn't just Yamamoto. It was a high-scoring game. I think 13-11 was the final score. The Dodgers won the first game of that 5-2. Now, there's no way I'll be able to keep track of wins and losses the rest of the season. It was just strange that the powers that be in Major League Baseball sent 2 Southern California teams to Seoul, South Korea. And I think the games are blacked out on TV without that special cable package. And with my sleep insomnia, I was able to catch a little bit of those games on the radio. And I also grabbed another setup pitcher, Brooks Raley, who one of the statistics in our league that you do get points for is a hold, which is a relief pitcher. It doesn't get the win, doesn't get the save, but they come in and stop the other team from scoring, and that's called a hold. And he had almost 30 holds last year, which is, a statistic, doesn't have as much value as a save, but it is something counted in our game. And I ended up picking him up because he was available. And in the back of my mind, I still figure that I'm probably going to call up Gavin Stone off my minor league roster. He's a LA Dodgers, probably going to be the fifth starter in the rotation. And I'm also more than likely going to grab Mason Wynn of the St. Louis Cardinals, a great defensive shortstop, someone with a cannon of an arm, steals a lot of bases, and is improving at the plate. He's a very young 21-year-old St. Louis Cardinal, and more than likely is going to be their opening day starter. And I just wanted to make sure that he and Gavin Stone stick around at least for a little bit, because last year, due to injuries, I had to call up Taj Bradley of the Tampa Bay Rays, and later Yuri Perez of the Florida Marlins. And I had to call them up because of pitching shortages, and they were available. And then in the case of Bradley, he went up and down with Tampa Bay a few times. And when he was sent down, I run the risk of losing someone who is like my number one or two minor league draft choice, and another owner picking them up. Now, we're going to have to wait and see how he does this particular season, but he's kind of on the bubble for me. Knowing Gavin Stone might be better. Gavin Stone came up last year briefly and got shellacked, sent back down. And he's had a good spring so far. We'll see how that works out. Taj Bradley was up and down a little bit, and usually when a player is kind of on the cusp and doing average, but as a young player, you know, the major league team might want to give them more reps against, you know, everyday hitting, get them more into the routine of the everyday grind and how to prepare for games, as opposed to, you know, maybe me helping out the major league team. But with due to injuries, he was up and down a couple of times. And he, Braxton Garrett, and Yuri Perez are all kind of looking to maybe start the season on being held on pitch counts at the beginning of the year. So I might have an issue with my starting pitching and might have to call up Gavin Stone, and he might just have to be active, because I won't be able to send him back down to my minor league if somehow the Dodgers decide to deactivate them and get him more reps at their AAA system. So that's something that kind of got to look at. And again, last year I learned from it and didn't want to release Taj Bradley, but it was a dead position on my team. And, you know, I couldn't go out and pick up a free agent, of which I did pretty well. There's a lot of players on my roster that were free agent pickups last year that are going to be the core of my team, you know, mixed in with the occasional, you know, high-priced player. One last thing I wanted to mention before the draft on Saturday, I kind of got fired up with a couple movies and documentaries. I watched Moneyball, starring Brad Pitt, who's the much better looking than Billy Bean general manager of the Oakland A's. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is in that movie. He plays Art Howe, and I think he had much less emotion than Art Howe ever had, although Art Howe was a pretty mellow and even-keeled guy. And I bring up Art Howe because it was a key to that story. You know, he was playing the players he wanted to play, and then Billy Bean, and there's this one scene where, you know, he traded about three guys in one afternoon, and Art Howe was just blown away. But then the A's went on a 20-game win streak. Ironically, the Angels went on a 19-game win streak that same season and ended up winning the World Championship against the San Francisco Giants. A couple highlights of that World Series, or lowlights, depending if you're an Angels or Giants fan. Just interesting moments. There was the rally monkey. Apparently, you know, Moneyball was one thing, but the rally monkeys really where the juice came from, as the Angels started that, and then it was one of these silly things they never let go of for a season or two. I think the rally monkey was undefeated for a while and was kind of giving credit for that 19-game win streak. Well, Oakland was on the 20-game win streak. And it was Dusty Baker taking the ball from David Ortiz in Game 6 after he thought Ortiz had done such a great job that they're basically going to close it with a bullpen. And then there was JT Snow, who saved Dusty Baker's kid, who was out there at home plate when JT Snow came running in. I think Barry Bonds was right behind him or something, or coming up to the plate. And you're like, good grief, why was a little kid doing out there in a baseball uniform? He wasn't in street clothes. But still, just Dusty, keep your kid in the dugout there. Anyway, so I watched Moneyball, and as we're out of time, I should mention the very interesting documentary on Nolan Ryan. And as I just mentioned, now all these teams are keeping players on a pitch count and, you know, this and that. Nolan Ryan is a guy who went out there through, didn't have a pitch count in his day. He had 7 no-hitters, the all-time strikeout leader. It's a highly recommended documentary. And, hey, Art Howe was a teammate of Nolan Ryan, and he showed more emotion in the real Art Howe and Nolan Ryan documentary than fake Art Howe, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in Moneyball. We're out of time. I can talk about sports all day, and I usually do. You can catch me doing it for 1 hour every Friday, 11 to 12, here on HealthyLife.net, each and every Friday. Replay Saturday at 9 a.m. and on demand. Back next week. I'm Jay Cruz. Thanks for tuning in.